Hi, everybody, and hello, and good afternoon here in Finland in the Temple of Silence. What I'm going to do now is begin with Rule 9. And this is our 13th White Magic video commentary on the rules for magic for the astral plane. We have 50 programs before that, which include the mental plane and the introduction. Okay, just checking to make sure we have our italics in place, as they do emphasize certain words or concepts, and they're not easy to transfer from the Alice Bailey CD-ROM into a Word document. Okay, so here we are with Rule 9. Condensation next ensues. The fire and waters meet. The form swells and grows. Let the magician get his form upon the proper path. It says get, but I'm not sure whether that is really correct. I think it's sometimes place. Occasionally these are set. It's not get at all. It is set. Okay, so that's one of those little mistakes. And in the transference from the book to the CD-ROM. Okay, set is the word. Condensation next ensues, the fire and waters meet, the form swells and grows. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path. And what we have here, two main subjects, the necessity for purity and fundamental forms. Okay, so onward. The first one, the necessity for purity, that which is caused by the application of fire in the right way. Rule number 9 is found on page 1017 in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And the comment is given and there and is noticeably brief. The rule is very briefly summed up in the injunction, let desire and mind be so pure and so equally apportioned, and the created form so justly balanced, that it cannot be attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path. So a balance between mind and desire, and a purification of them, and the form resulting from the descent of soul intention into the mind and thence into other areas of the personality, and finally to be externalized, that must be justly balanced. The reasons for this brevity may be stated to be due to the extreme simplicity of the rule in the consciousness of the man who knows, and its extreme complexity from the standpoint of the casual reader. Okay, so difficult for the casual reader, easy for one who knows. Only the simplest and most practical of its significances is there given, but perhaps a few of the deeper meanings can be imparted. Now, we've had some discussion of this in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire written commentaries. And you can find them there on Makara. Also, probably I included some factors from A Treatise on White Magic. So in a way, I'm going over this material now in a more detailed manner. It is interesting to note that as progress is made upon the path, the forms in which truth can be given become more and more simple, whilst the meaning grasped becomes more and more wide and inclusive, and hence involves, on analysis, more and more complexity. Well, I think there's an old saying, a word to the wise is sufficient, and I think it fits with this little section of the paragraph. Simplicity, apparent simplicity, but ever more layered meaning, leading to an understanding of greater complexity. Finally, resort is had to symbols, and the cosmic plan is grasped through the presentation of geometrical forms to the inner eye of the aspirant and, let's just say, the higher initiations are performed in this way, through the presentation of symbols. Excuse me. The cardinal point emphasized in this rule is purity. And in the last analysis, this is something that the hierarchy always looks for. Purity is largely a question of motive, what you foresee, what is the goal, the envisioned goal of your action, and is it in line with the divine plan? If the incentive to action of any kind in the three worlds is based on personality desire and brought about by the applied use of the mind, then impurity characterizes the action. That's so clear. Basically, what he's saying here is that strictly personality objectives are impure. We're interested in the higher fires. We're interested in focusing our consciousness within the realm of these higher fires, and we do not want to be veiled and somehow clogged and inhibited and prevented by the lower fires of the personality or the lower conditions of the personality. Master Moria talks about the fiery type. Whatever your astrology may be, whatever element seems to be dominant in your chart, there are fiery types of beings, and I think it's very much those who respond to what he calls a psychic energy, and that is the energy of the soul, I think in the words of DK. If the impulse emanates from the dweller in the form, it is then subordinated and controlled by the dweller to the desired end. Now, we can have a very advanced dweller on the threshold at one point, but it still may be inhibitory if it has not been submitted to a larger, selfless, plan-centered objective. Then the characteristic is purity within the group limitations. For absolute purity only exists when entire freedom from control has been brought about. So even consciousness within the causal body is relative purity, of course. The soul is group conscious and group controlled, and until the causal body has been overcome and liberation from its control achieved, the real significance of purity will not be comprehended. We might say the sword of spirit is pure. The scabbard in which the sword is sheathed is not pure. And by that, we We understand that the causal body is still within the dense physical body of the solar logos, whereas the sword of spirit, the true ego, the true soul, is within the cosmic etheric body. So even though we strive towards causal consciousness, it's still only a relative ascent. Then he goes on to say, suffice it to say that there is a close connection between impurity and limitation of any kind, physical, emotional, and mental. And, you know, some of the old adages come out here. You probably know what I'm going to write. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Interesting, because these particles, these obstructions by lesser forms within forms that do not belong within the form which is to be purified, these do block the way and have to be expelled, either through the Om or through burning, let us say. They have to be expelled. And I sometimes think, you know, when we, look at a condition of impurity, we have to realize how important is the right kind of sound or mantra in the expelling of the forms or of the particles of the, well, simply the dross, the impurities which do not belong. Fire and sound will do the work. But absolute purity need not here be considered by the aspirant. I mean, we really, we can barely make our way here to the higher mental plane, and we have many other realms within the cosmic physical plane which have to be entered, focused within, and eventually mastered. We're nowhere near absolute purity. And absolute purity, heavens, it's absolute purity would relate to nothing in cosmos and is the province of the absolute itself. But, you know, that's a philosophical idea. And suffice it to say, if we can achieve even a relative purity, so that the higher divine impulses can actually work through us as personalities, then we're doing well. No one in the esoteric groups of the world, you know, led by masters, really, has yet achieved the fifth initiation, wherein the meaning will enter the consciousness in a blaze of intensest realization. Now, remember, remember that the fifth initiation is that of the revelation. So he is implying here that some in the esoteric groups have achieved the fourth initiation. Or, you know, if not now, then soon to come. But I do believe even now there are some who have that particular ability. Maybe they would be disciples within the master's heart, so to speak, the sixth stage. For the majority in these groups, physical and emotional purity are the objectives, and hard enough, I might say, for all of us, and primarily, therefore, liberation from emotional control and from desire. Okay, I just wanted to see what our audience is seeing here. It looks pretty good. There's nothing, well, it is a sad thing when you go through a whole program only to discover that you've had your mute on all the time, or that no video image has been showing. I've been through that a number of times and have to take a deep breath and do it again. Okay, so physical and emotional purity are the objectives, and we might say, and therefore, initiations 1 and 2, because a relative degree of physical purity is achieved at the first degree, and a relative degree of emotional purity, not entirely, perhaps, at the second degree. And primarily, therefore, liberation from emotional control and desire. Now, you remember that little section in Rays and Initiations, and let's see if I can fairly quickly find that, the ancient domination, freedom, ancient. Okay, so we'll see here on page 686, 685, I always have to remember that, birth freedom from the control of the physical body and its appetites. In other words, they may incline towards satisfaction, but one is not compelled. Baptism, freedom from the control of the emotional nature and the selfish sensitivity of the lower self. I've got to remember that page. It's an important one. So go to page 685 in Rays and the Initiations. So we are achieving these degrees of freedom, freedom from the a kind of compulsion which it seems must be obeyed and cannot be resisted. When it can be resisted, it may arise, but at the same time, it does not have to force the individual to perform according to those impulses. So, liberation from emotional control and desire. That whole section on freedom in the Rays and Initiations, page 685, 686, really very important, and it brings us up to types of freedom which we can barely conceive. Hence the constant, even though badly worded, injunction. Okay, let's see if I can do this. Badly worded injunction in many of the esoteric books, kill out desire. In Light on the Path, that D.K. considers to be a very militant treatise, and it was really written somehow by the master Hilarion, and it was taken down by one who was sensitive to him. I think Mabel Collins was her name. Kill out desire is there. But every time we're told to kill out something, we're told to act like one in whom it had not been killed out. In other words, certain qualities are preserved, even though the motive is entirely changed. So kill out desire. And the Buddha would say, or simply has said, I've got to remember where my brackets are here. Kill out desire for the phenomenal world of the lower 18 or 21 subplanes. Even desire for the causal body is a limitation, and all temples, once they perform their task, and not before, must be destroyed or at least elevated into a higher state, even as the causal body and its contents are raised transmutatively, transfiguratively and beyond. They're translated, really, into a higher state. That word translation has a lot to do with the movement from the dense physical body of the soul of Logos into his cosmic etheric body. Perhaps a more just rendering for the immediate present would be reorient desire or redirect desire. Master M seems to suggest that you're not really going to get rid of desire. We might say desire is a cosmic principle. So it cannot be eliminated. Maybe even at the very heights of cosmos. Who's to say? But anyway, for us, it seems that reorientation and redirection are the key. Reorient desire. For a constant process of reorientation, that means, and again, facing the sun, facing the east, facing the sun, and I'll put it in reorientation, facing the east, where the sun rises, symbolically, facing the east, where the sun rises, symbolically, for a constant process of reorientation of the entire desire nature, so that it eventually becomes an habitual state of mind, is the clue to all the transmutation process. Transmutation can be a very high thing. There are different levels of transmutation. I think if we look in Rule 10 in the rays and initiations, we will find some of the higher meanings of transmutation and transformation. It's not just applying to the lower movements within the personality of man. So a more just rendering for the immediate present. I mean, he's careful about the law of mutation because everything is constantly changing, aspect and relationship, would be reorient desire to the worlds which are not the phenomenal worlds and redirect desire to the higher points of tension and points of possible realization. For a constant process of reorientation of the entire desire nature, so that it eventually becomes an habitual state of mind, is the clue to the entire transmutative processes, to all the transmutative processes, and to effective magical work. So this is another way of saying we have to be high-minded, and actually to desire higher things, rather than just violently suppress our desire for the lower things. So as A.B. stated, use the power of substitution. It accomplishes a lot more than this sort of violent attempt to hold down and not allow expression of the lower tendencies. So when you find yourself maybe drifting off a bit, and as DK says, when your point of tension is a bit lower than it should be, find the proper objective and emphasize it. I'll give you an example. You know, the year is 2018. I'm not at all approving of some of the movement towards autocracy, dictatorship and all that that's going on in the world because of the fear. But rather than directly attack the figures who are the channels for this autocratic view, I look at the soul of the nations in which they are leaders, and I attempt in my own way to so strengthen that soul, that presence, that radiation, that it will automatically eject that which is not in line with its purposes. So this is perhaps a method of transmutation and transformation and elevating desire rather than just entering into conflict. At some point it may be necessary, of course, it was in the Second World War, but instead of just entering into conflict, which DK basically had said is the old way and is not really solving much, you know, maybe in certain conditions where emergency prevails and there's just no other way than do or die, you know. So we have very few truths that are true under absolutely all circumstances. Maybe we can find some, you know, like being is, that would be a truth, true under all circumstances, but then is it true or can one predicate it of what we call the absolute? Anyway, we have to proceed carefully, and we can point to something that was going on in the 1930s when he said, okay, members of the New Group of World Servers, no criticism from you, no attacking of any government or its leaders and that kind of thing, because that's the old way and it doesn't work. And yet the time came when hierarchy took sides and quote-unquote Hitler and his evil gang really had to be eliminated. So it all depends. What is the truth of the time depends on the circumstances to a great degree and how severe they are or how much we can rely upon higher methods. As progress on the path is made, the thought processes of the aspirant become more potent, and the thought forms created with definite purpose in the meditation work become more effective in bringing out results. I mean, you know, as aspirants, it's not only what we say, you know, let's just say our effect on others is not based only on what we say, but obviously on what we think. You just think of how Master DK is working with the souls, the higher mind of his students, and he's not necessarily saying out loud everything that will be influential. Thought is a great potency, and, well, we are responsible for what we think. And in that opening part of Rule 11, where it tells us about the eliminations we must make, we have to keep our thought process in good order and properly segregated, so that thoughts which do not belong together do not mix with each other and pollute each other, especially the lower polluting the higher. It will be apparent, therefore, that in magical work, which has ever to be wrought out on the physical plane, with the seventh ray, you know, you do have to see the appearance. Let's just say the seventh ray eventually demands the appearance on the dense physical plane. There will always exist the tendency towards the left-hand path until soul consciousness is permanently established. We have to say after the temptations in the desert and around the time of the third initiation. But before that, imagine, you know, facing the Christ or someone who is equivalent to the Christ, the Bodhisattva of the time, because there have been a number of Bodhisattvas. The duration of their office is apparently about 2,500 years. Facing that great being for the second time, you can pass on and be the victim of ambition and selfishness and all kinds of difficulties which you would think that would not prevail. I mean, in doing these programs, you know, I'm living with other people, naturally, and there are other demands, and my commentaries get interrupted by things that have to be done, and sometimes very mundane things, you know. Anyway, I'll try to continue here, and if I have to cut it short, and this being a shorter program, well, then so be it. Program apparently number 13. Anyway, we become more powerful thinkers, and energy follows thought, and we are responsible for the quality of our thought and the energies which follow those thoughts and their effects upon other people and upon the environment. I think it's Master Mori again basically saying, half the world thinks and the other half carries out the thought. And maybe it's even fewer than half that do the thinking, with the others somehow carrying out the thought. And when we're caught up by great, massive thought forms of no particular elevated quality, then we become the victims of illusion. Anyway, may I remind all who read that the establishing and stabilizing of right habits is, for the aspirant to discipleship, the prime requisite. Right habits. That's to say, how can we call it, a good foundation of spiritual habit. Those who are working in the field of planetary evolution, right here, I mean, we have plenty to take care of right here on our little globe and in our chain, and I couldn't say that we're really working on the entire evolution of the planetary scheme, except that the smaller contributes to the larger. But those who are working in the field of planetary evolution are looking for dependable instruments. So he's really calling the masters and higher beings, those who are working in the field of planetary evolution and know what they're doing according to the plan. Dependable instruments. I remember being called into an interview with Mary Bailey when I first started working there at the Arcane School, Lucis Trust, and we discussed Foster Bailey's attitude, and I said, well, why'd you come here? I said, well, I'd like to be useful, and she said, well, Foster always said that about himself. At least let me be useful. It's a very utilitarian perspective. I suppose there are so many mixed motives when you join esoteric groups, you know. As DK tries to point out to us in Rays and Initiations, and maybe it's Rule 11, that it's often our own selfishness that brings us, spiritual selfishness, that brings us into membership or affiliation with an apparently spiritual group. It takes a long time to see that selfishness and to get through it. And the Christ consciousness, of course, is the selfless consciousness. And the more that we have the mind as it is in Christ, the more selfless we become, and the more dependable, the more useful. The great plan is the plan of love, especially at this time on this planet, with its secondary soul, and we're in a major secondary solar system. The plan is the plan of love for the solar system. All of us as units are units of love, really, and we have to somehow express that, whatever our ray structure may be, because we are little cells in greater beings whose purpose is to express love and wisdom. Those who are working in the field of planetary evolution are looking for dependable instruments. You know, wake up in the morning. Am I a dependable instrument? Or is my dependability somewhat compromised today because I stayed up too late or, you know, treated the body unwisely, or I'm troubled in this way or another? Am I dependable? And this cannot be too emphatically impressed upon all of you. Okay. He means, there's no question who he means here. He means us. That's what he means. We better, you know, take to heart, even though, you know, this book is written for aspirants. Well, we're all aspirants in a certain way. No way around it. It's all relative. Even the Christ, even the planetary logos is an aspirant to some much greater membership. Just look at the larger whole. If a person's a disciple in relation to a larger whole, he's an aspirant in relation to a still larger whole, and maybe only not even just an elemental in relation to a still larger whole. People whose emotional moods and feelings run riot or who lack physical control cannot be counted upon in an emergency by those who are seeking helpers. And there's all kinds of emergencies which are imminent now. The next 7 years, and to an extent during the period in which there is a, I would say, an expected recrudescence of the lower type of sixth ray energy and the lower type of Piscean energy. These are emergencies, and we have to be counted upon to help. Probably, you know, we will have one more incarnation before there's really a clearing of the sixth ray and Piscean energy, and a firm settling into the Aquarian energy. So maybe the next incarnation will be very, very demanding for many disciples, because they have a chance to clear within themselves certain obstructions in a very pressureful period. You know, Master Moria says, it's hard to fathom what he says here, but he says, the worse the better, which kind of means if things are extreme, you might really get something done. And the masters had hoped to keep the Second World War from precipitating, but because it did, with all of its shambolic implications, the broom swept many things clean, which would not have been swept if things had not been so severe. So it's hard to judge in the midst of a cleansing process whether it's for good or ill. We, the little instruments, experience pain, and we know it's bad from a relative point of view. But in the long run, it may be better to experience one's own karma and the karma of humanity in a more intense dose over a shorter period of time. You have to be careful, though. That example of Madame Blavatsky's associate, Bhagavan Das, was it? Or maybe it wasn't. Anyway, I'm not sure that that's the name. There was this Brahmin high soul like Blavatsky, and he asked, Tisa Baro, yeah. He asked his masters to precipitate his karma. And he really got it, you know. He got Hodgkin's disease, a very lethal and ugly form of cancer, and he died. And, well, you don't know, though. In the future, it may have been a real clearing of the decks and sort of a first-ray approach. So, in other words, we can't allow our moods and our feelings to run riot. We cannot lack physical control, because then we're just not dependable. I'm only thinking about those boys who were rescued from the depths of that cave 4 kilometers in. Oh, if they had been out of control physically or emotionally, it just wouldn't have been possible. People whose minds are clouded, or whose inability to hold the mind steady in the light is inherent, you just can't do it, are unsuitable workers in the high places of world endeavor. I mean, they're doing more harm than good. So, you know, this is a book about magic. This is a book about control, or magical controls. He does talk about that. I know a few magical controls, he says. And is that enough? Well, it's on the way. This remark, now, he warns us and then he encourages us. This remark need deter no one in these groups from pushing forward, for the recognition of a defect is a preliminary step towards its overcoming. It's unpleasant to recognize truthfully that it's there, but how are you going to deal with it unless you recognize it, you know? So people at least have to have the courage to recognize what's wrong, right? It's a preliminary step. So for all of us, let's just say, have the courage to recognize our defects. And it's a blow to the ego in the lower sense. And it's a blow to our pride, but it does bring on humility and right proportion and the ability to apply forces in the right place and in the right measure to create a better situation. Okay. These groups, such as the group he was working with, or groups during the 30s and all those groups of nine, these groups are in training, and this must be borne in mind, or else discouragement is apt to ensue when the ideal is enunciated. And he basically says, no one can do good work under discouragement. So, you know, kind of remember that, you know, when you're dealing with people. I try to remember. I'm not always successful. But you don't want to ever, you want to speak the truth, but not discourage the one that you are speaking to. That's hard because, you know, what's the difference between truth-telling and discouraging criticism? Always leave open the door to possible elevation, no matter how seriously you have to speak to someone. I, you know, in my mind, that some of those later letters to ISGL, a man who could have taken the second degree, in Discipleship 2, they are prime examples of how the Tibetan had to let a person down through the telling of truth, but could raise him up and re-encourage him if he would only listen. And there's no guarantee that we will necessarily listen. World need and opportunity go hand in hand at this time. The great ones who stand as a wall, you know, that great defending wall between humanity and planetary karma, it could just sweep us off, you know. It has to be, its reapplication, or its application has to be regulated in terms of time. Who stand as a wall between humanity and planetary karma are, we are told, hard pressed at this time. And I can assure you that this is but an, oh my goodness. Excuse me. DK, the master of understatement, you know, but an inadequate statement of the case. Just imagine, you know, if planetary karma were released all at once, we would be swept away. Form could not take it. And the project of raising a humanity to do the right thing would be very seriously delayed. He's warned us, you know, let's not have to start all over again what we started 18.5 million years ago. Could be serious, of course, you know, even the longest definite period of time, I emphasize definite, is but an infinitesimal, absolute infinitesimal, compared with eternal duration. The thoughts of men since the middle of the Atlantean period, which we call it 4.5, 4.6, somewhere in there, have steadily been attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path. Now, the left-hand path is ruled by the first ray and the fifth ray, the energy of the left-hand path. The economic Jewish force is the third and seventh ray, and how does he put it? The second ray rules over all of this and is pervasive, but we have to deal, I think, in externalization of the hierarchy. I don't know if I can find this, you know, but it's very interesting how he divides the forces. And of course, wouldn't you know it, I have to somehow see if I can find this. I think it's in EXH, but Jewish force, third. Let's see if it's there. No, it's not. But Black Lodge or Fifth Ray, I'm not sure. Well, anyway, I assure you, it is there, third and seventh ray, for the Jewish force and the Black Lodge, the first and fifth ray. And you can kind of see the combination of those rays producing the destruction of the atomic bomb and weapons of mass destruction. So anyway, I know it exists, you know. And I'm tempted right now to really go looking for it, but maybe you'll just have to take my word. I think it's in the externalization of the hierarchy. Anyway, the thoughts of men since the middle of the Atlantean period, maybe 4.4 to 4.6, have steadily been attracted, or since, you know, and continuing on into our era, have steadily been attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path, because selfishness has been their motive and self-interest, the dominant factor. And remember how concrete can be this fifth ray and how separative the law of cleavages is, very separative, and is ruled by the concrete fifth ray. And that was the same time, of course, that initiation really began to come to the fore. So some could in Atlantis take advantage of this fifth ray power to initiate. But at the same time, it is a force that tends to divide the lower mind from the higher, and thus the personality from the soul, and thus leading to a very materialistic approach. Part of the work of the Christ when he came 2,000 years ago was to offset this tendency by the inculcation through example and precept of sacrifice and unselfishness, and the martyr spirit, tinctured as it oft was by hysteria and the heavenly self-interest, was one of the results of this endeavor. Well, you know, he really emphasized the sixth ray, which was coming into power at that time, to accompany the approximately 2,500-year presence of Pisces, equinoctially. The equinoctial ages, the processional ages, presence of Pisces as ruler of the dominant precessional age. So he didn't come to emphasize the fifth ray, but now the fifth ray will be really emphasized because it naturally accompanies Aquarius. There are certain rays which naturally accompany the energies of constellations and those which are cyclically brought in. For instance, the fifth ray always accompanies Aquarius, at least at this time, and the seventh ray is being brought in a special cycle to accompany the Aquarian equinoctial or precessional age. They're two separate cycles, and whether that goes on when you have the big Aquarian age of about 25,000 years, whether there's going to be a huge seventh ray presence for all that time is hard to say. I don't think he ever tells us it will necessarily be the case. But in this secondary cycle, rays 1 through 7 can accompany any constellation. We could have, we're coming up to Aquarius sub-7, but there have been times when it's been Aquarius sub-6, sub-5, sub-4, sub-3, sub-2, sub-1, etc. So that is a different cycle, and no wonder this science of cycles is very much related to all knowledge on the atmic plane, the third subplane of the third cosmic plane, that, or the third cosmic subplane of the cosmic physical plane. Okay, so scene, right, so Christ came to offset this tendency. Now, DK warned us, you know, there was a man who was on the track of, in the next life, developing a, he was secondary soul, maybe fortunately, but developing a first-ray personality, a third-ray mind, a sixth-ray astral body, and a fifth-ray brain, and DK was warning him about the occult danger of such a combination. Just imagine having that brain, which is extremely, extremely concrete and tending to deflect the higher Assyrian modes of progress. Even though Sirius has a lot of the fifth ray, but it's a different kind of fifth ray. It's not that concreteness, which is so often separative. Anyway, seen from the standpoint of hierarchy, the effort of the Christ has been successful, for the Christian spirit stands for the reorientation to heavenly things. You know, so what have we got here? Basically, sixth ray and Neptune and even Mars. Scorpio, Christianity is such a militant religion. DK points that out. So, but Mars has its value, and it does energize the fires of aspiration, which are scientific, the methods of elevation. Hence, purity of motive. You know, we've got to aim for that archetypal relationship in circumstances, right relations in circumstances. Not just right human relations, but right environmental relations. Hence, purity of motive and the instinct for service, which latter keynote is new from the standpoint of the past eternities. And there you can pretty well see eternities here. Eternities are considered to be cycles and not forever nesses. I know there's no such word there, but you know, eternity sometimes is forever and forever, but it is also considered to be a large period of time. Seven eternities, you know, the eternal parent has slept for seven eternities. So do we have it? Do we have this purity of motive and instinct for service? If the heart is awakening, we will have both. So this is offsetting materialism, okay? And we really need it now, though. Offsetting materialism, but now we really need it, because the materialistic potentials of the age of Aquarius are considerable, given the rays, right? Two rays which can be very materialistic, the seventh ray, both constellationally associated, by the way, in this case, the seventh ray and the fifth ray. And there are other rays that are coming in via the planets, but we have to be very careful that we just don't turn into a mental, materialistic, manipulative age here. You know, the age of Aquarius is not all that it is deemed to be in that popular song, which has got a lot of the sixth ray idealism in it. Okay. All right. I'm going to do my best to keep the save working. In spite of this, however, the tendency to selfish interest is the most potent factor in the world at this time, and hence the critical situation. In spite of, you know, in spite of this, you know, we might say this being the presence of the Christ and all his efforts on behalf of humanity for reorientation. The tendency to selfish interest is the most potent factor in the world at this time, and hence the critical situation existing between the hierarchy of light and the, you know, lesser, it's not capitalized there, is it? The hierarchy controlling the left-hand path, or the path of control by form and desire. There is another, would you say, good definition of the left-hand path, of the left-hand path. The control by form and desire, very much in a way related to the irrational factors found in Cancer, which is a sign that harkens back to an early period earlier period of materialism, but of course the mental power of these types is very, very great and equal to their selfishness and perhaps contributing to their selfishness. Let there be no discouragement, however, for the spiritual thought resulting in magical work of one brother of pure intent is of far greater potency than that of many brothers. Notice they still are brothers who follow the tendencies of the personality. Well, this is, you know, the good teacher warns and then lifts. The good teacher warns and then lifts and gives hope and a way through, which he does. So let us become brothers of pure intent, white magicians, and let us, although our numbers are relatively few, seek to outnumber in power and effectiveness those who follow only the tendencies through misidentification of personality. Though every true aspirant, as he grasps the magnitude of the plan and surveys the forces against him, may be overcome by the apparent futility of his effort and the seeming smallness of the part he plays, let him remember that there is a steadily growing group of those similar to him and that this is a group effort. So, you know, basically, new group of world servers is real. That's what we're really saying here, and let it be a source of encouragement to us. Under the law, the great ones work through their disciples in all countries, and never before has there been so many endeavoring to fit themselves for the function of being transmitters of the purpose. Sounds quite high, doesn't it? You know, custodians of the plan and registrants of the purpose, custodians of the plan. It sounds high, but on our own level, you know, we're trying to be little transmitters of the purpose. This function of being transmitters of the purpose, and never before has there existed such a strong inner integrity and subjective relation between workers in all fields of the world. This is for our encouragement. We do need encouragement, otherwise we lose our way and we fail to assert as we must. So the times are ripe for real spiritual progress. For the first time in history, there is a coherent group for the masters to use. Ever since 1925, I suppose. You're speaking, I think, of the new group of world servers largely. Heretofore, there have been lonely, isolated workers in tiny, detached groups, and this has greatly hampered the work. Now, this is changed. So, let's see. Where are we? This is changed. I want to charge you all, you know, in certain rituals, you get the charge at the end of the ritual, charges you up. I want to charge you all to realize this and to work to substantiate this group integrity and to develop the power to recognize all such workers everywhere under any name or organization and to cooperate with them when so recognized. In other words, recognize the members of the new group of world servers and strengthen their hands. Okay, so I suppose we're close enough to the end of a one-hour program that I can say that this is the end of a treatise on white magic video commentary number 13, Rules for Magic Plane. I'm going to make that a Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane and Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane. I have it in different ways, but this will do. Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane. Okay. And our page is page 260. All right. And we are in rule 9, and this is 9.1. And here we have the beginning of a treatise on white magic, video commentary number 14, rules for magic on the astral plane, number 14, page 260. And it's rule 9, and this is 9.1, and over here I've got an 11 going there. It should be a, all right, very good. All right, friends, well, we've maybe done 5 or 6 pages here, always inadequately, but hopefully suggesting thoughts that may help us clarify our position as workers with the divine plan and strengthen our hands so that we can strengthen the hands of those we recognize who may be unconscious of their affiliation with the divine plan, thinking of it as something else, but we can strengthen their hands and perhaps, as the Tibetan suggests, let them know, help let them know who they really are, because they may have a deep connection with hierarchy but may have foregone registration of that connection so they could accomplish even more, maybe even more than we at present can accomplish. All right, onward then, and we'll see when we can talk next time, and whatever date this is here, I think it's the 18th of July, 18, July 18. Alrighty. All the best, lots of love, study hard, see you soon.